Revelation 13, we actually haven't done much reading there. We are doing a background side study on the heads and horns in Revelation as well as in the book of Daniel. And we've read quite a bit in the first volume, the second volume, and the third volume as it relates to the subject. It's a very detailed subject, but it's one that has a lot of moving parts, if you will. And when I'm using that expression, moving parts, it means that we have to think about a certain way of heads and horns in the book of Daniel and a certain way of heads and horns in the Revelation. And there is a relationship between the two, but it's not exact. And so I'll just state something that we've been talking about is that we're primarily following the rise of papacy into a position of power in the gospel age. You will remember that we were tracking the rise of papacy coming into power in Revelation, the 12th chapter, where we had a lot of detail and history, as you recall. And now, as we're starting Revelation, the 13th chapter, we're going to focus again at the beginning of the chapter on the rise of papacy. So, because we have this identifier in Revelation of the Roman Empire as having seven heads and 10 horns. At one time on the dragon, and another time on the beast. We're interested in sorting that understanding out, the heads and the horns. But in part, it took us to Daniel, where the papacy is a little horn, not a head, it's a little horn. And in our Revelation, the papacy is depicted as a head and not a horn. So it's this juxtaposition, which I just enjoy saying that word. That's the moving parts that you have to think one way in Daniel, another way in Revelation, but they're related. So I believe we have left off in Daniel 7 last week. We're going to pick up in Daniel 7, but let me just ask if there's any opening comment or question that was left over. I know there's a lot that's left over. We'll hopefully delve into it, but I'll just ask if there's something to initially. Okay. So in Daniel 7, we're actually going to come back to this chapter later, to reread verses 1 through 7 when we actually start reading in Revelation 13, because there is related information between Daniel 7, these first verses, and in Revelation 13, the first verses. It's talking about the different animals and their parts and what they might symbolically represent. But that's not where we're starting. We're going to start with the fourth beast here in Daniel 7. And Sister Carrie, could you read for us in Daniel 7, verse 7 and 8, please?
Daniel 7, verse 7 and 8?
Yes.
After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things.
And opening comments here, Sister Carrie?
The little horn, as you just mentioned, was the papacy. And it was little, I think we've been saying, that because it had no military of its own and used the governmental powers, militaries, to keep in power. And it's saying that it has eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things has to do with the cunning manipulations, the way they were able to deceive people. Okay, that would be it. The ten horns are the dominions throughout time, successive years of under the Roman Empire. Okay.
Well, that's very good. Thank you. We appreciate that. Further comments on these verses? Okay. So we're going to say again a thought that we've been talking about. In Daniel, it shows horns can be successive. And in Revelation, even though that's true, in Revelation, it doesn't make that demarcation of the horns being successive. In the Revelation, it makes a demarcation that the heads are successive. So again, it's a moving part. They're related. But because in Daniel, we're not focusing on the heads here, it's focusing on the horns of this beast. They are shown as who is the horn in power in a successive fashion. One power had control over another. So it's just that a little observation. Now, last week, it was kind of a good question that it talks about in verse 8. There came up among them another little horn before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. And Sister Carrie, could you read as well now verse 20?
Verse 20, and of the ten horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows.
All right. So, Sister Kay, I'm just going to ask you some leading questions. Where are the horns?
They are subject to the Roman Empire. I believe they're spread in the western part of Europe.
You are answering far more deeply.
Oh,
just
okay.
In this verse, where does it say the horn?
Oh, on his head. On the head of the beast.
Very good. So, brethren, this is our scriptural authority when we say the horns are on the heads. We've reasoned that it's logical that the horns are on the heads because the horns are divisions of power, but they're subject to a controlling government. So the head, the government, controls the powers, the horns. Okay. But here's a verse that tells us. Okay, so we had a question on that. All right. So, again, we have 10 horns here in this fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire. That's similar to what we have in Revelation. And it says that three fell before that horn that had the eyes and mouth, which was identified as that little horn as the papacy. Blasphemous claims, and it had wisdom, farsightedness. And the reason it had wisdom and farsightedness is because the papacy is Satan's masterpiece of his Antichrist systems. And that's what gave it the great wisdom, knew how to manipulate things. But beyond that, what we find is it's not that the papacy necessarily plucked up these three previous horns or powers. It's just that these three horns or powers were plucked up in succession prior to the papacy becoming a power or an authority. And we talked about that. Can anyone tell us our three horns that were plucked up again? The Hughes?
We can share it. The first one would have been the Western Empire in 476 AD. Molly, you want to do the second one?
Okay, and then the Herali in 489. And then the Ostrogoths in 539. I don't know if those dates are all correct, but the groups at least.
Yes, the Heruli would have been, the Ostrogoths would have been plucked up in 539. They would have been done. Yeah. Okay. Then we have our little horn. Okay. So as you and I have talked about in other studies, in the book of Daniel, for example, in fact, we're going to come back here to 7, but take a look in Daniel 12. And Sister Roseanne, could you read in Daniel 12 verse 11, please?
Yes. Daniel 12 verse 11. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the papacy, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days.
Okay, I was going to say, I liked your translation, but I think you included your interpretation.
I think I did too.
opening comments here?
No, thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Who would like to tell us about this verse? Brother James?
This would be referring to
And the papacy.
The papacy or the Bishop of Rome getting civil authority officially from Justinian. So those three horns that we mentioned, the third one would have been the Ostrogoths that then were removed or plucked up, leaving a power vacancy. And so Justinian gave civil authority to the Bishop of Rome, which isn't like the full it was the beginning, I should say, of that horn growing. So that's why the abomination that causes desolation was set up. So it was created, wasn't in its full force yet, but we think that would be the beginning of it. Over.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you, Brother David.
Thanks, Brother Rick. I was just thinking about let's see here, 1,290 days. That would be translated into years, and that would be actually from as Brother James said, 539 to 1829 in the start of the Millerite movement, when the abomination that make it desolate was set up, and from that time to actually the beginning of the cleansing, I think, of the sanctuary was at 1290 days. If I have that correct. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother David. Just one little correction, because you said it. The cleansing of the sanctuary had its own separate time prophecy. That was 2,300 days or years. And that's found in Daniel, the 8th chapter. And that 2,300 years did start with the same date of 539 A.D., but it concludes in 1846. But your the rest of your comment was very good. Thank you. Sister Roseanne.
Oh, I was just going to add, I had a minute to read my notes, and it began in the mass and the papacy had to be set up at 539 A.D., so that's what I just wanted to mention.
Okay, very good. So that is an important point. As we all know from our previous studies, the Mass we have a record of the, historical records of the Mass as being performed in the 300s. Papacy might like to claim earlier. The expression transubstantiation came about centuries later, but that's the phraseology that came about, but they were practicing the Mass in the 300s. The Mass, the Roman Mass, was the priests were able to supposedly recreate the body and blood of Jesus literally, and then crucify him afresh to be a daily sacrifice in their sense whenever they do that, rather than the continual sacrifice of Jesus' ransom once for all being sufficient. They replaced that with their Mass. That gave them power over the people. They have to attend their churches. But the set up has a thought in the book of Daniel as being empowered. And so we needed the papal system, which had instituted and practiced the Mass. That is, that's the abomination that makes desolate by replacing the one for all sacrifice of Jesus. And as brought out, the papal system was set up in a sense as a temporal authority by Justinian I, who was ruling in Constantinople in the east of the empire, and had his general defeat the Ostrogoths in the western part of the empire, in Italy, and particularly in Ravenna, Italy. They were defeated, which then, as brought out, left this power vacuum in the western part of the empire. So the one constant, stable personage or office was the Bishop of Rome. And there was another attributing factor. Justinian I was Trinitarian, and the Bishop of Rome was Trinitarian. And these Goths were primarily Arian. So there was a sense in wanting to consolidate the empire with representatives in the East and West that agreed on the thought of the Trinities. So this wasn't a time that papacy became a head. It didn't become a head or a government as in Revelation in 539, but rather the process took a giant step forward by it becoming a horn or power, as depicted in Daniel. Okay. Any comments on any of that? So take a look on our, take a look in Revelation 11 and, let's see. Sorry, I'm going to pass on that. Let's just go back to Daniel 7. Try to be a little more streamlined about it. Daniel 7, Sister Cheryl, could you read there for us verses 9 through 12, please?
9 through 12, and I beheld till the thrones were cast down and the ancients of days did sit, whose garment was white as snow and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands, thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him, and the judgment was set and the books were opened. I beheld them because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning fire. As concerning the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time.
All right. Well, opening comments.
Does remind us of Revelation. Now we're taking to the end of this dominion. The Ancient of Days, we know it's Jehovah. So the power is taken away. I'm wondering, 12 and concerning the rest of the beast. So we had explored last week that this where we would normally think is papacy are people. So I believe is what we discussed. So it's just showing that the whole system is brought down. Can't comment on their lives were prolonged for a season and a time, unless that is the little season. They're given an opportunity. We know that's going to take place. So it's just showing a further at the end of the stream of the age. Over.
Okay, so Sister Cheryl, let me ask you some questions. That's very good, and these are challenging, can be challenging verses because we didn't read a lot of the context. But if we had read the first opening verses, what beasts do we have mentioned here in the opening verses of Daniel 7?
Well, we have Babylon still.
Yeah.
We're studying that on Wednesdays. So yeah. We have Belshazzar. So it's the end of the Babylonian control.
So you got. In verse 3, you've got four great beasts came up. And you've got, in verse 4, you've named the first one, Babylon, the lion.
Right. Well, we know it's Babylon, Medo-Persia.
Yeah.
We got Greece, and then we got Rome.
That's right. So I think we would say that these, concerning the rest of the beast in our verse 12,
oh.
That's those three empires. Okay. And the thing is, they lost their empireship, as it were, but their lives were prolonged. We still had each of those, the peoples of those kingdoms, continued on. They were just dominated by other power.
That makes great sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's Brother Russell's thinking on it. And yet, in this description of Jehovah's judgment, it's depicting that his fiery judgments come forth and that each of these four beasts that were previously mentioned, these Gentile powers, each one will be replaced and defeated. The people of those powers will continue. But when we finally get to this fourth beast, and when we get to that little horn, in particular papacy, it has its dominion removed, And there's a consuming of the papacy, and yet there's a future final destruction of it. That's part of what makes it so distinct. Last week we talked about the consumption, but let's read a little bit more here, but I just want to ask, is there any other comments on these first, verses 7 through 12 that we've read so far? Sister Molly.
I just wanted to make sure I was understanding correctly. In verse 11, the beast that is mentioned is the fourth beast, being Rome. Is that, it may have been said. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And that, but okay, I'm trying to keep my words few, but that's right. Okay. So now let's read our next setting. It's the interpreting of the dream, as it were. Because it's Daniel. So, Sister Bessie, could you read for us in, Daniel 7 verses 13 and 14.
Okay. Verse 13. I was watching in the night vision, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed.
All right. So, opening comment on that, Sister Bessie?
Yes, this is a beautiful picture about the Jesus who take power over, and his dominion is everlasting dominion. So as we see transition from one to another, this one stay forever. So this is, says that none pass away. His kingdom, the one which will never be destroyed. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We're going to read more on this here in the next verses. But brethren, this is another example of when the brethren talk about the fifth universal empire. Here's another example. We had the four beastly ones, and then we've got this fifth one, takes their place when, after Jehovah's removed the previous four. But let's read further here. Sister Gina, can you read in chapter 7, verses 15 through 19?
As for me, Daniel, my spirit was grieved in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings that shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I desired to know the truth concerning the fourth beast, which was diverse from all them, exceeding terrible, whose teeth were of iron and its nails of brass, which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with its feet. So it looks like, and just in verse 19, we are talking about fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire papacy. And it also brought in that that the fifth, we were just talking about the fifth, the fifth universal empire, of course, that being Jesus and the church ruling. And that's all I got.
No, that's good. That really covers it. Thank you. Other comments on this? Okay, let's keep reading some more. Brother Mark, would you like to read for us? You reread 20 and come down to verse 20 through 25.
All right. And the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head and the other horn, which came up and before which three of them fell, namely that horn, which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts and which had, was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. Until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom, 10 kings will arise and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue three kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the highest one, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times and a half time, but the court will sit for judgment and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated and destroyed forever.
Okay. Opening comments, Brother Mark.
Well, it gives us here, some background meaning, it sounds like, to the 10 horns against kind of reiterating that, and three of them falling. Again, one that had eyes and a mouth, and was it? And I like how it brought it out, bigger in appearance than the others, in appearance only, because it was a bunch of boastful untruth. Which would be, I think we're talking about Rome and then into that papacy or something like that. And then, so that horn was raging war with the saints again for the, I think the 1260 years, because it brings out the times, times and half times. So 539 to 1799 seems to be the period we're bringing up again here till the French Revolution, where it was silenced, the Pope died, and the church had some relief after that, the true church. And I think that's it for me. Over.
Okay, well, very good. Very definitive. And we like, and we get, for you and I, we like the end of that verse 25 because we get a time frame that helps us put this interpretation into a historical perspective. As Brother Mark was bringing out, we have our times and dividing our time, our 1260 years, which ended in 1799. Again, our 539 start date to 1799. The beginning of the demise of papacy is a civil power, even though we know it has one last hurrah for a brief power in the future. But very good. Other comments on these verses? Okay. We're just reading it pretty straightforward. We're seeing these understandings of how we're having, again, this gospel age history, and particularly of when the Roman Empire became nominally Christianized under Constantine and onward, like what we find in our Revelation. We know the Roman Empire, you know, was in existence, and it did defeat the Greeks only in a sense. Now, Brother Russell goes into great detail. only in the sense that the Grecian Empire started with Alexander the Great, so to speak, but after his death, his four generals divided up the Greek Empire into four divisions. And out of one of those divisions, Rome came up as a power. So it's in that way that it overcame it. If I said, I might have said just now that Rome conquered Greece, that wasn't the right way to express it. Rome came out of the Grecian Empire. That's the better way to express it. So, so then what we're finding is that here in Daniel, as in Revelation, the Lord wants us to focus on the Christian era of the Roman Empire. And that's where we, because he's introducing us to the papal horn and what it was doing and would do. And how, even though it had would gain such great power, how the Lord's judgment would sit upon it. And how the judgment would come in phases of its removal. And you might remember we looked last week in the second volume where Brother Russell had the four phases of the development of the Antichrist papacy and four phases of its demise. And that was very, very helpful there. So let me just ask, are there other comments here on this? Okay. So let's round out the chapter here just to finish this Daniel 7. And Jeff, would you read for us verses 26 through 28, please?
But the court will sit, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. And the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all those will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, and I kept the matter to myself.
Thank you. Opening comments, Brother Jeff?
Talk about turning things over to Jesus. That is out of mankind's hands at this point, at least according to Daniel.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other comments on these verses? So we're finding here that the judgment shall sit. Now you notice in verse 25 at the end, we had our times and dividing the time. So we've got the end of our 1260 years. The judgment shall sit. Its temporal power was removed in 1799 by Napoleon imprisoning the Pope and having him die there. That too is related in the book of Daniel. In the 11th and 12th chapters. So this all corresponds. But even though the judgment shall sit, it demonstrates they lose a dominion, as just mentioned, but there's an ongoing consumption that will lead to its utter destruction in the end. So that's what we've been talking about, papacy since 1799. And then in the future. Another part of the consumption I'll emphasize because we're just here. The so-called papal states were given to the papacy. And when we talk about the papal states, we're talking about a huge land area inside Italy that were these papal states were given by Pepin the Short. And reconfirmed by Pepin's son Charlemagne in the late 700s. And those papal states continued with the papacy until 1870 when Victor Emmanuel I took those states away from the papacy, created and united Greater Italy, as we have modern day Italy ever since 1870. That was Victor Emmanuel who would do that. So that the Vatican was reduced, the papacy was reduced to a land holding in particular of the Vatican City. Even though they own property all throughout the world with their various churches and seminaries and retreats and other things, they did lose this huge property of the so-called papal states. And I mention that because it shows a further consumption of the papacy, but not its utter destruction. And it's emphasizing, brethren, this is an important point, it's emphasizing, we think, its destruction of temporal or civil authority. But it maintained its religious authority all along the way for those who were believers. And what we're looking for is this future 1 hour of power with the papacy influencing the civil leaders again for this short 1 hour in the future before its utter destruction. So we'll just say that to say that. Any other comments here on these verses? Anything? Brother James.
It's just nice to see looking at the history of how papacy was set up gradually and different things were set in place, and you could see the scene was created for papacy to be established. Now you can see how that fifth universal empire, same thing, these little things keep happening, and slowly the Roman Empire with papacy controlling it, how these things also then happen and have lasting effects or sometimes delayed effect, how that fifth universal empire will take over. That's, everything's done in these gradual processes. Nothing is cataclysmic. But it's nice learning from the history and then seeing how that will influence the present time and future. Over.
Okay, very good. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Ruth.
I was just thinking of how it fits in so well with 2 Thessalonians 2. Can I read that? 2 Thessalonians 2.
Yes.
7-8.
2 Thessalonians 2 starting in 7, did you say? Okay.
For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So the consumption seems like he's talking about this in Daniel 7:26, same thing, being consumed by the truth, really, and the brightness of the Lord's return, starting in 1799, but really was supercharged when he returned.
Okay, important point. Can you reread these verses with the better corrections from the Greek, from this King James as you read it?
Okay. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he, the pagan Roman Empire, who now restrains, will restrain until he be taken out of the way. And then that wicked, the lawless one, shall be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness, epiphania, of his coming or presence. Over.
Okay, very good. So, as brought out, the pagan Roman Empire was standing in the way of the man of sin, the lawless one, from having the control that it desired over the Roman Empire. And when Constantine adopted to become nominally Christian, that hindrance was now removed. The pagan aspect of the Roman Empire faded, and the nominally Christian aspect of the Roman Empire increased after Constantine. And as you and I studied in Revelation 12, that was a centuries-long struggle between the dragon and the counterfeit Michael, who was going to have control over the empire. And the counterfeit Michael, that is the lines of popes, or these, or the man of sin here in Thessalonians, they actually won and got control over the empire. And it became known as the Holy Roman Empire. But here, as Ruth is bringing out, the emphasis is that when the Lord Jesus returned, 1874, through the increase of light and knowledge, the epiphania aspect of his presence, it enlightens the minds of the people to reject much of the Dark Age doctrines of the papacy. And we've seen that is an aspect of the continuing consumption by revealing the darkness, but it's not complete and it's not perfect. And in some areas of the world, the papacy continues to grow. But you know what it did do? And it'll take a moment. The increasing light of our Lord's presence in Epiphania, it caused the papacy to have Vatican Council I and Vatican Council II in the 1960s. And particularly the Second Vatican Council, I forget the exact year, it's 1960-something. This was a tremendous upheaval in the Roman Church. They adopted quite a number of what would be considered very liberal viewpoints. Traditional Catholics were not particularly happy with. One was they started allowing priests to say the Mass in English instead of in Latin, for example. Even though people still didn't know what they were really saying, what it really meant, unless they were studied and, you know, paid attention to their catechisms. Nonetheless, there were multiple changes. You don't have to eat fish on Friday. They modified their concepts on, babies being in limbo, just a variety of things. So that it tried to make tried to update the papacy into the more modern world. And the papacy really didn't want to do that. That's not something Satan wanted to do. But like other things, Satan had to change his game tactic in order to offset this increasing light that was consuming its power and authority over the people. So here's that way in which we see certain aspects of the consuming of papacy, even though it continues to change to try to stay relevant in the modern world. Brother David.
Thanks, Brother Rick. That just jogged my memory. That time period, I was in a Catholic church, and I remember the priests always, they had a large stone altar, and they would face where they, it was called a little tabernacle, where they put the hosts. And after those councils, they pushed that back, and then the priests faced the people, which I thought was a very large change from talking in a dead language, and then actually, like you said, addressing the people. But it was only another illusion, because there was really nothing clearly being spoken. It was still the same, confusing changing of spots. Okay, thank you.
All right, good. That's a good testimonial. You saw it. You saw the start, the change. So, brethren, again, I don't want to get a sidetrack, which I can easily do. Just want to make those observations that in history, we do see how these things have had their adjustments along the way. And we do appreciate the Ruth's emphasis that this consuming of papacy, starting in 1799 with the papal with civil authority, continues, but it's not over yet. It's not destroyed yet, as we know. Okay. Anything more here in Thessalonians? Was there anything more in Daniel 7? Okay. So let's look in the Revelation, and this is a bit of a challenge because I think what we'll do, because we're kind of summing up the side study together, we have the mention of, we'll look in Revelation 12. We have our first mention of this seven heads and 10 horns in Revelation 12. And it's in verse 3. Revelation 12:3. I'll just read it. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and 10 horns, and seven crowns upon his heads, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for devour her child as soon as she was born. So this is our first mention in Revelation of the identifier of the Roman Empire as seven heads and 10 horns. Here the crowns are on the heads, and it's a dragon. So we're all convinced, we know in Revelation the dragon shows civil power particularly. The red shows it started as a pagan Roman Empire, and yet we're focused on verse 4 that it's the tail end of that pagan Roman Empire. It's the tail end that used its power, and that represents Constantine. And as we said, Constantine had started out as a pagan, but he adopted nominally Christianity in 312. In 313 AD, they had the Edict of Milan, legalizing religion and Christianity. And so it shows that this great red dragon's tail, the tail end of it, had become Christianized, and it was exercising its influence over these bishops of the Christian church, and actually had ruled with Constantine that a third part of them should be cast out from their role of being lights in the nominal church. And the third part that was cast out was the part that believed like Arius, that God and Jesus were separate, and Jesus was, and that God was superior to Jesus. That was the third belief. There were those who believed God and Jesus were the same substance. There were those who believed they were separate, and there were those who were on the fence. But when the emperor ruled in favor of that God and Jesus were the same substance, the party that was on the fence went along with that. And so it was this third group, the Arius group, that were cast out by the dragon's tail, by the Roman emperor. So here's our great red dragon, seven heads, 10 horns. The crowns are on the heads, just demonstrating that that head, Constantine, he was the government. He was first and foremost, he was an emperor. That's why the crown is depicted on the heads. So this gets us our time setting, we think. It's the end of the old pagan Roman Empire. It became Christianized, and now we're going to learn more about that empire. The rest of the Revelation, the 12th chapter, as we studied, shows that conflict between the papacy, the religious control, and the emperors having religious control, and in the end, the papacy won. So, any comments on this here? Okay. So our Revelation 13 and our verse, let's read verses 1 through 3, Revelation 1 through 3, and Brother Chris, would you do that for us, please? Revelation 13, 1 through 3.
And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, and his seat, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast.
So, Brother Chris, I'm going to ask you to focus still on our, like, our heads and horns study aspect of this, but comments on this, please?
Well, here we go. And I saw. So we're getting, like, a different perspective of what we've already covered in 12, et cetera. And here it is, a beast, and it's risen out of the sea. This is the pagan Rome. So we're getting like another synopsis of this, a snapshot of history. And having 7 heads and 10 horns, that's the identifier that this is, these will be successive heads. The horns are ever changing as these heads come and go and empires rise and fall of these different emperors. And upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. So you're not going to be blasphemous unless there's a religious element to it. And so, again, this is the rise of papacy. And the beast which I saw was like unto the leopard. So it's got all these components of these earlier empires, Babylonian, Persian, full of false gods, false ceremonies. And so it's incorporated all of that, all those things. And it's got a great mouth of a lion. So depicting the various strengths of these animals, the lion, the bear, and then it goes, and the dragon gave him his power. So this pagan Rome, ultimately, its strength was given to this papacy, ultimately. Like I say, it's a snapshot of all the things that we know, and great authority. And so once he gave him the title Pontifex Maximus, bridge builder, he was now the religious ruler. And so he becomes an entity, a power, a head, as it were, in a sense. Not fully yet, until a little bit later after that. And then I saw one of the heads in verse 3, wounded unto death. Now this really throws you down the stream of time. And you know, we'll go into greater detail on that, but it received a deadly wound and was healed, and all the world marveled at this. So this goes back to our earlier study in Revelation regarding the Reformation, and it looked like papacy was down for the count. But lo and behold, it just won't go away. Like every villain movie, you think they're dead about halfway through, but no, they just don't die. Over.
No, well, before we leave you, Brother Chris, that's very good. Could you also read for us verse, as funny as it is, it's verse 14, but we're focusing on the last part of that in connection with this.
and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So, you know, living on the earth, they're definitely not living in heaven, the spiritual realm of truth. But, yeah, again, this refers back to papacy surviving this Reformation. Over.
Okay, now that's very good. Appreciate that. Very, very helpful. Ruth.
I was thinking on that verse 1 that I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, that the beast was rising when there was not a very strong government in Rome. It was under the Goths, the Heruli and the Ostrogoths, and the Western Empire was already overthrown by them. And so it was more of a sea environment. It wasn't like rising up out of the earth would be a stable society, but it wasn't.
Okay, good point. Very true. Thank you. Brother Mark, Sister Gina?
Just real quick, and if this diverts us, don't worry about it. But in verse 13:1, where we're talking about the 10 horns and 7 heads, is this similar to Daniel that we were just reviewing in chapter 7, and it's just kind of picking up after the 3 horns have fallen off? Is that why it's got just the 7 heads here versus the 10?
Well, it's where would you get 10 heads?
From Daniel?
Where in Daniel would you get 10 heads?
Oh, I thought we talked about 10 something. 10, oh, never mind, 10 horns.
Correct.
Thank you.
Exactly. That's part of the moving parts that make a challenge.
And remembering a horn versus a head.
Yeah, right. So, but fortunately, the 10 horns of Daniel are like our 10 horns in Revelation. That part is connected. The 11th horn in Daniel 7 is the papacy. Very interestingly, it's 11th horn, and it's inferior, even though it boasts itself, like you were saying earlier, Brother Mark. But here in Revelation, here the papacy is being demonstrated as being a beast, and that the dragon, the civil power, had given its authority reluctantly at first, but over time more willingly. It demonstrates that this beast had to come about after the Roman Empire had become nominally Christianized, which we've talked about. And it demonstrates further that in the vying for power between the papacy, the bishops of Rome, and the emperors of the empire, that eventually the emperors saw a need to use the bishops of Rome to try to keep their east and western part of the empire together. That was Justinian the First giving power to the Bishop of Rome, saying he's the head of all the churches, head of all the bishops, and then the Bishop of Rome becoming the de facto civil authority in the West that people could rally around. And then by 800 AD, having received the papal states from Pepin and Charlemagne, and then the Pope crowning Charlemagne as the king in 800 AD. This then cemented the triumph of papacy to have control of the empire. So it went from in 539 being set up with authority, but still a little horn in Daniel, to becoming a head of the beast in Revelation in 800. So a head is a government. A head controls the other horns. So this is showing that it, by 800 AD, the papacy, the so-called Holy Roman Empire, was now a much stronger condition. So as what was being brought out, our verses 1 and 2 show a process that we might say from, you could say from 325 in one sense, but more particularly in 539 down to 800. And by 800, there was no question. The dragon had given its power to the beast. That was pretty well set. Now we backtrack a little bit because it's how Revelation works. Sometimes you move forward and then backwards. In verse 3, Revelation 13:3, I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. The deadly wound was healed. The world wondered after the beast. And then we learn in 14, even though the primary context of verse 14 is talking about the Church of England and Ireland, yet there's this aspect in which the Church of England and Ireland was modeled after the beast before it, the papacy. And you know the Church of England and Ireland was started by King Henry VIII. He had been a papist, but he broke away. He formed his own religion for his marital problems. And he started his own religion, but he modeled it after the beast before it. And that beast is the papal beast. That beast is the one that had a head that was wounded by a sword, and a sword represents truth. The truth was the Reformation. However, the papacy healed that wound by having its own counter-reformation. It did reform itself in the late 1500s. It did correct many of the morality errors that they had engaged in. And they refashioned themselves. And so that wound was healed. And that head is what we're going to call it's the papal head, the Holy Roman Empire head that was healed. So we're keeping that in mind. It's not that the papacy had multiple heads. It's that the papacy was a head, one of the seven. And it was the one that was wounded and yet was miraculously healed. The other part of this healing process of the papacy, sadly, was that the reformers stopped their reforming. They only went so far. We love them. We love our Luthers and Zwinglis and Calvin and others. However, they ended up creating their own state churches. Now, there's others who didn't, like the Anabaptists, that stayed separate from the governments. And we appreciate that. But nonetheless, the Lord used these reformers to bring us the Bible in the people's language and to definitely rebel against papal authority. That they did. Okay, so you're all familiar with that history. So with that, I thought that so in our side study, before we go through 13 verse by verse, chapter 13 verse by verse, in our side study, this is the second place we have the seven heads and 10 horns. Here it's the beast. Okay. The next place we have it is in Revelation 17. And in Revelation 17, this is the challenging chapter. It has its own unique features. The brethren have a number of views, not unusual, but it's good for us to have our thoughts as best we can And if you don't find it convincing, that's okay. You could just put it on the shelf. And like we always say, the beginning of understanding comes with being familiar with the information and being familiar with the possibilities. So, you know, that we just want to say that from the beginning here. So we have our seven heads and ten horns is first mentioned in verse 3:17:3. And I am looking at our time, trying to keep track of it this time. So we'll come back to this chapter next week, but let's get started. And Sister Brenda, can you read for us there Revelation 17, 1 through 5, please?
Revelation 17, 1 through 5. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit unto the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Over.
Okay. All opening comments, Sister Brenda?
Just opening comments. As you said, this is another place where the seven heads and ten horns are. So it shows us that this is papacy over, because it's speaking very blasphemous. And as Brother Chris said, blasphemy usually is related to religion. Over.
Okay. No, that's very good. Appreciate that. Sister Debbie.
Just wanted to ask a quick question. If in verse 3 said, and he carried me away to a wilderness, could that possibly show the passage of time? Because in verse 1, the whore is sitting on many waters, and then in verse 3, she's sitting on the beast, and maybe that could show the passage of time to when the church was in the wilderness. Over.
Okay, very good. So, good question. So, for time's sake, I'm going to say it. But we got to close, but not next week. I said that wrong. The week following, next week we have Brother Eliezer Juco serving the first hour. So it'll be 2 weeks from now. But let me just give some initial thoughts. Most of you will be familiar with it. Verse 1, and there came to me one of the seven messengers which had the seven bowls. And those seven bowls would be the seven last plagues. One of the messengers was the writings of Brother Russell, who explains to us in the second and third and fourth volumes that the papacy is this harlot woman. So it's Brother Russell's writings that explains to us and identifies the history of the papacy, this harlot woman. At the time in which Brother Russell is on the scene, his writings are on the scene, we are in the sixth head. We are in the sixth head. Look at verse 10. And there are seven kings. These are like our seven heads. Five are fallen. So five heads. Five forms of government have already preceded. One is, there's a current government, and the other is not yet come. So our viewpoint is the sixth head or sixth government on the Roman Empire, as it were. The seventh government hasn't come yet. And when he comes, he's going to continue a short space. So we learn that this seventh form of government over the Roman Empire, so to speak, is going to have a short duration. But you and I are now told that five of these governments over the Roman Empire during the time of the Christian era have now passed. We're in the sixth. So this head, the sixth head, we believe is Victor Emmanuel the First, because he, as we said, took the papal states away from Rome in 1870. He consolidated Italy as we have it today, and he started the Victor Emmanuel dynasty. So he is this sixth form of government, sixth head. And that was the time period of Brother Russell's writings. So that helps us put this together. The woman, the harlot, is on the waters. She's sitting on the people because she's not in a government position. She's not riding on the beast. She's at that time. She's not in government. She is a religious system supported by the people who believe it. She had fornication with different governmental powers over the centuries, and she had made the inhabitants of the earth, people under her religious constraint, they were all intoxicated with her false doctrines. And so our verse 3 to the question, he carried me away in spirit into the wilderness. And so this is how the church living now can say that through Brother Russell's writings, he showed us the history of papacy, of what was happening to our brethren during the 1260 years in which the woman fled into the wilderness, supported by the two wings of an eagle. It was the time in which it was the heyday of papacy, from 539 to 1799. This is taking us back in time to look at the history of papacy. And that's what you and I do when we read the second and the third volumes. We're going historically back to identify the papacy and what she did.